Hello, and welcome to AgTech So What, brought to you by the AgPendant Group. I'm Sarah Nolette. As we head off for the holidays and the summer here in Australia, we thought we'd bring back one of our favorite and most popular episodes from the AgTech So What vault. We'll be back at the start of 2022 with new episodes. But in the meantime, this is my conversation with Mark Ferguson, or Ferg as he's better known, from back in February 2020. Ferg has gone from scientist to consultant to AgTech entrepreneur, and as you'll hear, isn't afraid to push for change in the agriculture industry.
There's definitely people out there who think this is not going to be the way, but I think the same could be said for blockbusters. There's all those examples of disruption that people sat there and watched the freight train come at them until it went over the top of them and didn't change. And I don't want to be part of an industry that sits there and waits for the freight train. I want to be on that freight train and going into the future.
As the co-founder and director of NextGen Agri, Ferg helps sheep farmers be profitable and get the best out of their genetics. At the time of this recording, we of course had no idea that a global pandemic was about to hit us, but it makes his insights on providing practical ag courses online especially relevant. And his ideas on adoption, research commercialization, ag tech, and consumer preferences are as relevant as ever. So let's meet Ferg.
So I grew up on a farm in northwest Victoria in the Mallee, a sheep and wheat farm. From there, sort of from about the age of 11, I think we started breeding sheep with my brother, who's still there farming and breeding sheep, off to ag at Melbourne Uni. So a four-year degree there, which I was lucky enough to have a cadetship, which got me involved with the Department of Prime Industries there in Victoria. That led me to Hamilton to work with some great people around nutrition in sheep, particularly in merinos. And I guess that work then led me to want to understand them at a whole greater level and sort of combine my passion of genetics with work, I suppose. So off to Perth to do a PhD with the late Norm Adams, who was really interested in how we breed sheep to sort of better fit within farming systems. So did that. And then, yeah, research career off to New Zealand after that to do some work with the New Zealand Merino Company, where we led a whole range of research to tackle a range of things, but really to get good breeding systems implemented in New Zealand. And from there started NextGen Agri to, I guess, do the bits of all that stuff that I was really passionate about and thought we could make the greatest change.
What Ferg is really passionate about is sheep genetics, but not all of his views are widely held in the industry.
I guess our job, or part of what we do, is implementing good genetic programs, good breeding programs on farm. The way we approach that differently is probably not just to think about the profit side of that equation. Genetics are just as good at controlling cost and reducing time on farm as they are at increasing the output of animals. I think we are to our farming systems and to the animals to breed animals that can prosper in our farming environment. So really matching genes to that environment so that they have higher welfare plus higher production, and then to the animal happy and the farmers happy is kind of the way we approach breeding. So never just how do we get more out of this animal. It's about how do we fit that animal best in the system to make the whole thing fit better for the farmer, better for the consumer, and better for the animals is what is our approach.
So it's funny actually, because from an outside perspective, that seems obvious. Like it seems like good business and it seems like how you do things. But as I've learned more about the sheep industry in particular, that's not how things have always been done. I mean, you've showed me pictures of award-winning sheep from not too long ago that look very different than the kind of sheep you'd kind of advocate for today. Tell me a little bit about why that view or that approach is maybe not controversial, but at least different than the way others think.
I guess I don't have any traditional background in sheep breeding. We've approached it from from first principles from the start. So just think about the kind of traits that would keep an animal on farm and keep it healthy. Seeing animals really perform from being in better condition score was the kind of really thing that I learned early, and knowing that was actually under genetic control rather than just under feeding. Obviously you can feed animals to be fatter, but you can also have animals that genetically want to be that way. And it really stems from that, and seeing how those animals thrive in their environment just drives us every day. We've got clients out there that are literally trucking off truckloads more of lambs because of that approach, rather than just thinking about it as a how do we get more out of that animal. If we set that animal up right, we get more, plus that animal is healthier.
The success of this approach is not something that Ferg is just seeing in research projects.
The Sutherland brothers at Benmore would be a great example of having a sheep type which was pretty traditional when I met them 7 or 8 years ago. Part of what we worked with them was talking around condition scoring and managing those sheep. But they've implemented lots of different size. You can see in those sheep, as the sheep have changed, they're now thousands of more lambs are coming out of that production system. They're finishing them earlier. There's a whole heap of things that have gone on as a result of just using size that had a bit more fat and muscle, a bit more constitution, and were plainer and, yeah, moving towards what I would see as a modern animal.
So if farmers are getting value out of these practices and this approach, why is it so controversial?
Yeah, I guess across all of our lives, we're always hooked to paradigms of how we think things should look because of what they used to look like. And that's still something we do every day. We come across people who, yeah, are a little bit, I guess, less keen on the shape of the animals or the way they look than what they used to. But the reality is if that animal is healthier and is more profitable, then we're crazy not to go down that line.
Ferg believes that the power of genetics has the potential to not only help farmers be more profitable, but also to help them align with consumer preferences. Ferg's time at New Zealand Merino helped to shape this view as he got to see it happening firsthand.
My time there was definitely sort of instrumental in really, for the first time, being exposed to overseas brands, like directly, as in meeting those people and taking them on farm and understanding the types of questions they were asking and where that was coming from. Had the opportunity through New Zealand Merino to travel the States a couple of times and get exposed to those directly to those consumer markets. And it becomes absolutely crystal clear once you're in those conversations what the future's going to look like in terms of their expectations of us as farmers and people that work on farms. So that time at NZ Merino really showed me that how much they value not just animal welfare, but also that relationship with farmers and that when their beliefs align with the farming beliefs, then that's a really great story and a great opportunity, which New Zealand Merino through their ZQ program have really capitalized on. Overseas markets love hearing farmer story, particularly when their values align with their own.
Tell me, what's an example of that? Either a conversation you had with one of those people from a brand or some of the work that you were doing when you were there, like help us. Because I think a lot of people talk about in farming, like, oh, well, now we have social media. So let's just tell the story of the farms. Then you'll get a premium and connect with consumers and everyone will be happy. And obviously it doesn't really work like that.
Yeah, so I guess the amusing thing is a direct, really, really great example of how New Zealand Merino basically took the hit more than 10 years ago and said, we, through our ZQ program, we won't sell Mills wool. And that has set them up for long-term contracts. Icebreaker were the ones that sort of led that. They've now got 10-year contracts with New Zealand growers and growers around the world based on their ethos of producing the fibre in the way they believe it should be produced. So I've got clients in New Zealand that have a 10-year contract with Icebreaker, knowing what that price or at least exactly how that price mechanism works for a decade in advance, which is just completely different for animal agriculture, really. That doesn't exist anywhere in the world that I'm aware of. And that has been 100% led by that trust that you build by listening and working closely with those customers.
That's so interesting. And you've had examples, I think, of like those brand managers going out and actually being on a station and seeing how different it is or kind of challenging their own expectations or understanding of farming. Any good stories about that kind of thing?
Yeah, we had the whole management crew from Smartwool on farm a number of years ago. And there's a bit of an offshoot breeding program I've sort of been working on for a while, which is breeding short-tailed sheep, and seeing their eyes light up when you showed them those animals and explain how that could be and just how engaged they are in that whole discussion around how we can do things differently that really shaped the way I see the future.
And what's the so what here for farmers or even for ag tech companies looking to tap into some of these macro consumer trends?
I think what farmers completely underestimate all the time is how much they are the rock stars to these brands or the brands. When you get these people out from these big brands in the US or Japan or China or wherever, they absolutely love being on farm. They love meeting the families, the kids, the dogs, and experiencing what we probably take for granted in our industry, like being out in the open. And I know we all love, and that's partly a big part of why we work in industry is the environment we get to work in. But we probably take it for granted how important that is to these international brands and how important it is for them to feel that connection of who they're, where they're sourcing that fibre from, because it really helps tell the story right through that is that connection to both what you get to do when you're wearing wool, but also what where that wool's coming from, and that connection is huge. And having witnessed that several times firsthand with taking brands out on farms, it's really powerful and really good to ground through some of the things that we were thinking of. We were starting a small short-tail breeding program and just taking the brand to visit that and see what their reaction was really important to help. Another one, we were putting sensors on sheep to try and understand welfare and getting the brand reaction to that was really important to make sure we weren't just off in fairyland thinking this was important to them, but actually seeing them firsthand that they did think it was important.
For anyone who's less familiar with the sheep industry, I asked Ferg to explain exactly what he means about the short tail program.
So obviously the sheep are obviously born with long tails, or some are and some aren't. And so short tail length is heritable. So we can actually change that to a point where you no longer have to remove the tail and it can still not get any health issues, and it can be go through life without that process, I suppose. And that's a way off. It's not like we're going to achieve that next year, but I think that's definitely part of our future.
And what are some other traits that you're looking at, or other kind of changes to the animal that align with environment or with consumers that you're excited about that are kind of coming online or in the near future, you think?
I think disease resistance is the big one. So no one likes to see unhealthy animals, least of all farmers. And we have traditionally got around that through management processes and chemicals. Obviously, we've got a world where chemicals are less and less okay in terms of our consumer expectations. So breeding animals that actually look after themselves. So foot rot resistance has been something we've been working on for a number of years. So foot rot's as it sounds, is a disease of sheep's feet. What we've shown over the last 7 years in New Zealand is that we can breed sheep that don't get that illness. For sort of 20 years, we've known you can do that for internal parasites, so worms. You can breed sheep that are much less susceptible to worms. Same with flies. There's a number of our great clients who have over the last sort of 10, 15 years have bred an animal that doesn't get fly stroke anywhere near to the same rate as others. So I think all of those breeding approaches where you reduce animal illness and reduce chemical use has to have some really good legs going forward.
When you talk about this stuff with clients, like, is it, because we obviously work in the ag tech space and talk a lot about adoption, and some of these changes you're talking about making are like 10-year programs and you won't see the results for a long time. What is the, I mean, are people just true believers and they go on that journey? Or like, I can imagine, in the app world, people want a silver bullet that helps in, a couple months or a year, and they want to see results, and talking about a 10-year change must be really tough to get people on board. Or what's the kind of psychology and adoption dynamics?
Yeah, it's really interesting, and it differs between individuals, obviously, same as it does in tech. I guess once people see it actually work in an individual animal, they're sold. But until that happens, it's a kind of a leap of faith. And so it really has been a 7-year lag now in our foot rot work, that this year, last year, was the first time people really started to take note of that and start putting it into breeding programs. People that know the technology works, it's kind of just an add-on to that. So they trust that if it's going to come out as a breeding value, then they'll be able to implement it and it will work. But they just don't, until they see it and see those animals that it's highlighted as being resistant, and then seeing what it means on their farm, that's when they really, it does need to be implemented on farms for people to really see it and believe it. But there's enough background knowledge of how breeding values have worked through every other thing that people are willing to take that leap of faith and believe that we'll deliver something useful.
That's crazy. Are there still people who find all of this, like everything you've kind of said in the last 10 or 15 minutes, pretty controversial, or would push back hard? And how would they, like, what would that argument look like? Or is everyone kind of on board with what you've said?
Not everyone's on board. So there's an element of people that think we should be able to farm the way we always have, or we should be able to breed the animals the way we always have. And that's their prerogative. And so there's definitely a significant spectrum of beliefs across the industry, and lots of those don't align with our thinking. But I guess the reality is that the change is happening, and if you're not changing, then there's only really one way the business is going.
How does it feel? Like, what's it like for you? Like, it can be tough to be out on kind of the cutting edge of some things and feel like there's people pulling you back or pulling against you or fighting against you. What is it? I don't know. Any examples that come to mind, or any moments where it's been, like any good stories of kind of that tension? Have you ever been booed off stage?
not directly to my face. I think in my younger days, I was much more, I guess, I would affront people more. Now I sort of, I'm confident that the way we're approaching breeding and the way that the industry is going to go, that we don't need to convince others. There's enough good people coming along for the ride that we have a good future. I think there's definitely people out there who think this is not going to be the way, but I think the same could be said for blockbusters. There's all those examples of disruption that you know better than I do, that people sat there and watched the freight train come at them until it went over the top of them and didn't change. And I don't want to be part of an industry that sits there and waits for the freight train. I want to be on that freight train and going into the future.
I like the one thing you have on your website is farming in our hearts, science in our heads, and that kind of balance of passion but data-driven approaches, I guess, is kind of one way to sum that up.
Yeah, and that was a great moment. I was driving along in the middle of Western Victoria when I came up with that. But I think it is exactly how we are. We are all very passionate about farming. It's in our veins, it's in our hearts, it's what we sleep and breathe. But we also approach that with a level of science, a level of knowledge, a level of data, and really try and think about it in not just from an emotional way, but in a business sense and in a scientific sense.
So you have been on farm, you've been on the research and science side, you've been in a commercial company, and now you're out on your own. Tell me about what was the decision like to go out on your own? Was there a moment where you said, I have to do this? Was it hard? Tell me a little bit about that.
Yeah, I think I sort of had two goes at that. So before I went to New Zealand Merino Company, I was almost going to go out on my own. I sort of started building that way. And then the opportunity to go to New Zealand and do that job came up. So I sort of shelved that for a while, but there was always this sort of burning desire to, I'm not sure whether it was just because I didn't like being controlled or whether I wanted to go out and do my own thing, but I guess I was always going to do it. So it was a matter of just biting the bullet. It was tough. I got three young children. The big thing is financial security, obviously. Going out on your own means you need to find money to A, live, and also then to grow, you've got to employ people. So that real first 6 months that first step where you know the wages have stopped but you're not sure where the next income's coming from is uncomfortable, to say the least. And I don't think that goes away that quickly, because you're always looking to grow, you're always looking to employ new people and do new things. So it's certainly has been a really great learning journey and a great experience. And I think I used to think I worked hard until you actually work for yourself, and then you really know you work hard. So, but it's great work. And as lots of people listening will be entrepreneurs or self-starters or people on the land that know that it's great working. It's so much better working for yourself and knowing that those hours you're putting in are growing a better future for you and your family is the plan.
Tell me about the next gen model. Like you guys have done a combination of consulting and research and playing with technology and online. What's the, I guess, give us your pitch where you're up to right now.
Yeah, so next gen is a combination of all the things I like. So we made a company that did all those things. I guess at our core, we are a consulting business to farmers, pretty much solely around genetics, implementing good genetic programs across from Western Australia through to both islands of New Zealand. So we've got clients all over the place. And so at our core is that consulting and that direct dealing with farmers. And we're really, really fortunate to work with some of the industry's best. And it's great to get out of bed and work with those people. I've also, obviously, with my research career and desire to do things at an industry level, we do industry research on behalf of the organisations like AWI, MLA. We still work for New Zealand Merino. We do a range of different sort of project management slash research work. We also have just, as of this week, have just launched an online training aspect to our business. We definitely understand that you can't, a consulting model where you run all over the country is not easy on us or our families, but it's also not easy on farmers having to go to workshops on days that suit us, not them. So we really see a great future in online training. So we're trying to package up some of what we do into online training where people can learn from our experiences and the work that we're doing in the comfort of their own offices or farms and at a time that suits them best. And then wrap around that some support through Facebook groups and through closed Zoom calls and those sort of things where people can ask questions directly of us and really grow our ability to interact with people sort of 24/7 and across a much wider geography than we can by jumping in rental cars and planes that we do now.
Do you see more kind of support in agriculture moving online? I mean, it's such an interesting tension of now you can access information anywhere and you can be part of a community of whether it's early adopters or seed stock folks or whatever niche you're in, you can find them online. But there's also, I guess, a traditional view of agriculture that's kind of sitting down at the pub or shaking hands and truly relationship based, which I guess implies you have to be in person. Is there a tension there or is online just an enhancement of what you can do in person?
Yeah, I think success will be a combination. I think I hear clients say, like they go to a full day workshop or something that they've driven 3 hours for, and they only really went there to hear one speaker, and the seven others they sort of heard and had a cup of tea or a beer and then went home again. So to me, the online training makes that a whole lot more efficient because you can just hear that one speaker and even interact with them at a whole much better level if there's not the tyranny of distance involved and the timing issues. But I also think that you can't just do online and you can't just, people need to learn from each other as well as learning from so-called experts. So getting them in a room and interacting is critical. So walking that tightrope is going to be something we need to learn over the next few years. And we're keen to have sort of member days where we get the people in regions together to get that social action, because without that, I think it would be difficult to keep the community and keep that growth going.
One of the things we talk about in ag tech a lot is in startups generally, is personas and kind of knowing who your market is and who you're really selling to, and that not, you know, everyone in livestock or everyone who's a sheep farmer is actually the same market. You have early adopters and things like that. How would you describe your kind of persona, your market, and how did you come upon that? Because it's appealing to say, oh, it's online, anyone can download my course, and I hope, you know, thousands and thousands do. Or is it more, you know, we're really targeting these kinds of people or these kinds of growers?
I think we're targeting farming couples that have taken on some debt to either grow their family business or to buy a new one. So our target persona is those youngish, and I call myself young at mid-40s, so who are really taking on some significant debt, some significant stresses associated with that, some significant sort of, I guess, family pressures to succeed, and just wrapping around a layer of support around those people that helps them make some pretty big decisions. We're not talking about small, just backyard operations. These can be several million-dollar businesses, tens of million-dollar businesses, and they're making some decisions that aren't that comfortable. So and need some support. So I think our persona probably is that farming couple, farming family that really want to get on and grow their businesses, but also have a bit of pressure from debt like we all do.
Interesting you say farming family. That's one of the big things that I know you and I've talked about a lot, the kind of role of families in decision making, and that it's not just maybe the bloke you see on the farm, that, you know, it's actually a family and lots of intricacies to how those decisions are made. So I don't know if you have anything to say about that. I guess you, one of the articles you wrote recently that you can see now on the website, I can link to it, is around how farmers are just people who farm. And there's all this, I guess, hype around, you know, what are farmers and are they really different than other people? But at the end of the day, they're just people.
Yeah, I guess I'm really, really strong on that. Having grown up, my mum and dad worked very closely together to make ends meet and to get our farm ticking over and get us all educated and doing what we do now. And all the people that I work with, there's some great farming couples, there's some great farming families out there. And so to limit that to just the stereotypical male would be a limitation and not something that I think is even relevant to agriculture. It's about that whole family and how that works together to make a business and make decisions and go forward. There's never an individual who's doing it all and the other person's just got their feet up on the couch.
Beyond just rethinking extension and what the future of livestock consulting will look like, NextGen Agri and FERG have been playing with tech in a more traditional ag tech sense as well. This all started for FERG with a trip to where I'm from, Silicon Valley.
Yeah, just being in the industry and getting exposed to, I could pretty much link it back to going to Silicon Valley for the first time and just getting exposed to the tech world there through New Zealand Marino and just hearing about what was happening in augmented reality, what was happening in machine learning, what was happening in in gene editing, what was happening in, so, and the, some of the fantastic speakers we're exposed to at Stanford University that really just lifted my sights completely about what the future looks like. And I guess the great opportunity for us in ag is that we know these problems better than anybody. And so I wanted to be part of that tech future where we know the problem clearly, we understand the tech enough to be able to apply that. So we've done a variety of things. We've done some things around sensor tags. But the thing that we're really interested in is the ability to apply image analysis to problems on farm. The one that we're really running at the moment is facial recognition in sheep, because that'll underpin a whole heap of changes that we can make through automated. We can automate lots of measurement, lots of understanding of what's happening on farm if we can get facial recognition working. So that's our current focus.
So this is like a camera and taking a picture of a sheep and saying, okay, this is this sheep, or is it? Are you saying other things about the sheep? What are you actually kind of measuring? You know, where are the cameras? Tell us a little bit about there. Paint us a picture of what that looks like.
Yeah, so we did some work with AWI where we had a crate set up and had four cameras around that crate and took a heap of images of each sheep, and then through collaboration with University of Sydney, analysed all that and worked out that in concept form that worked. We could tell sheep separately from each other. So I think in that work, we had 1,900 individuals, and it would tell with sort of 99% plus accuracy which individual that was just by the photo of it.
Were you surprised by that?
I guess yes and kind of no, because I know that I walk through the airports every day, and the only thing that lets me in the gate is facial recognition cameras under that controlled scenario. So I guess there's no reason that sheep are different to humans. apart from a few obvious aspects. But that work sort of wasn't taking us closer to, because putting sheep in a crate, if you've got them in a crate, you know who they are and you can weigh them and do everything else you need to. So we wanted to move that to how can we do that out on farm or in a more commercial context. So now we're running retraining models. We've got a race set up that's got four cameras on it. So we run sheep through, which gives us about 30 frames, so 30 individual images of those sheep as they bolt through, same as any normal drafting race, drenching race. We run down that, and the idea is that would be directly linked to a camera in the paddock, and so that once it runs past, the animal is linked to its EID, to its RFID, and then we know who it is, and then so an image of that sheep, wherever it is on the farm, we'll know who that animal is. It's kind of, that's the work we're doing right now to train that model. So at the moment we've run around about 600 or 700 sheep through that race. Plus, we've taken images of those individual sheep out in a paddock, and so we're training a machine learning model at the moment to do that. And if that works, then we sort of onto the next stages of actual behavioural tracking and working out when they're grazing, when they're doing whatever from images. So we've got a range of different work through students and collaborations going on that across that spectrum at the moment.
That is super exciting. That in itself could become its own business or kind of take all of this work to the next level. Is that the vision and the aspiration?
Yeah. So genesmith.ai is a company that is sort of waiting to be formed once we get some of this working. So we see that as being a standalone component, which will become a spin-off from NextGen Agri, which will be which will focus on consulting and that online training aspect plus some research. But we see that whole tech space as sort of growing a life of its own and getting its own team and really driving forward, because it's just an enormous opportunity to really take big steps in the sheep industry towards understanding what individuals are doing, the same as what we see in yield monitoring in horticulture and cropping and what we see in dairy cows. In the sheep industry, we really have been limited to mob-based stuff. And if we get beyond that, then we open up a whole new level of opportunity that really is just sitting there waiting to be explored.
I'm excited to have you back on the podcast in a year or two and hear an update on how that's going.
Hopefully, not two.
Yeah. Deal. When you talk to farmers, whether clients or not, about this work and facial recognition and all this tech, what's the response like?
We don't talk so much about the tech, but about what we can do with it, which is matching news to the lambs, matching performance to the animal, monitoring animals remotely. Those sort of things get people really excited. I think the big one is just that they want to know their animals are healthy and happy. And if they've got a system that helps them do that with a level of integrity that means that, that they can go on holiday or they can go to town that day and do something else, knowing that their animals are safe and happy, that that peace of mind, I think, is a massive aspect. There's also obviously the upside in terms of productivity. But first and foremost, the people across agriculture love seeing healthy animals, and any system that helps them be really early with making changes to make sure their animals are healthy and productive, I think that gets people excited, that that real ability to monitor animals at a whole new level.
And it ties back to your point about consumers as well. I mean, there's increasing pressure on being able to prove some of those kinds of things, welfare and, you know, well-being and keeping that clean, green image there. So I imagine there's some potential there as well.
Yeah, 100%. We started off with a sense of work with really that in mind. And we talked about that to those brand partners. They love the concept of monitoring animals 24/7. And so it wasn't just a pipe dream that the animals were being looked after. They really were monitored and looked after. That resonates with farmers and it does with consumers.
With an expert like Ferg on the show, it'd be a mistake not to ask about the future of the sheep industry and where he sees things headed.
I'm very, as we all are, aware of the consumer trends and what's changing. And I think like the current strong demand for wool we're seeing and for natural fiber, I think that seems to be not just a flash in the pan. That seems to be a real thing, and that's stemming from a real desire from some of these big brands to really have a product they can stand behind in terms of the whole backstory of that product. So I think we're in for good days in the natural fiber industry. I think as we understand more about microfibers going into oceans and the whole heap of things that plastics are doing to the planet, and a natural fiber that biodegrades within a sort of 6 months of hitting the ground sort of ticks a lot of boxes in terms of the footprint, the sort of overall footprint of growing wool production. I don't think we can sit back and say, yep, job's right, we produce protein and the world needs more protein, and so we're going to in for great times, and we produce wool and the world needs more wool, we're in for great times. I think we need to be really smart and think about what that looks like. If we are going to demand a premium price, we have to be premium producers, so we need to be really aware of what that consumer wants. They're going to wool because they want to have a really good backstory, but they're not going to go to wool if there's skeletons in the closet that put that brand at risk. And so we need to be really thinking about what's happening on farm, what's happening in our breeding, what's happening across everything we do, in our marketing, in our manufacture, what's happening across that whole spectrum that might be viewed negatively in 10 years, and think about how, I guess in our lifetime, how much more scrutiny has come on what we're doing and more aware people are of what's happening, both on farm, but in that whole process from farm right through to garment. I think we need to be really aware of making sure we're squeaky clean and we are producing in a really premium way. And I think environmental credentials and welfare are going to lead that.
For anyone listening who's excited about what Ferg and NextGen Agri have been up to, check out the show notes for links to the blog, Twitter, and the website, launching a number of courses and online options. I also asked Ferg to give us a shameless plug for where to find him.
So www.nextgenagri.com is where you'll find our website, and there's a whole heap of information on there, opportunities to get access to us. Articles will be going up frequently, and then not opportunities to get access to us through subscription and through online training.
Great. I would like to keep hearing updates from you. I learn a lot and have been really fortunate to have someone like you teach me so much about the sheep industry. So thanks for that. And I'm really excited to see where all of this goes.
Thanks, Sarah. I look forward to continuing to work with you.
Thank you for joining us on another episode of Ag Tech, So What? You can stay up to date with the latest episodes and news at agtechsowhat.com. And as always, if you have any feedback or other guests to recommend, we'd love to hear from you. Just hop on the website and leave us a comment or send us a message. Finally, if you like what you're hearing, and we hope you do, please share the podcast with a friend or leave us a review on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. Thanks again for listening. Catch you next time.